Tape three was Dr. Gloria Sarto, and we're going to talk about the women's movement.
You know, of course, the women's movement started in the 70s all across the country. And I think finally we got the FDA to make a few changes, and all along that's a whole other history of all that national stuff. But anyway, so it was moving in here on our campus here at Wisconsin. It was really moving, I think, more than lots of other institutions, and I think it's because of Ruth Blyer. And so it was going, and she was starting a women's studies course. So we must have had that relatively early here on our campus.
We did.
And so that was going, and I knew that was going on. But I was doing the things I was doing, the abortion stuff and all the stuff that I was pretty progressive in the medical school. They would sort of include me, but I wasn't in that movement. And they said, yeah, but what you're doing makes you part of it. And so they sort of included me, but I never felt pressure. You know, they didn't say, oh, you have to do this or you have to do that. I think because they respected perhaps what I was doing, saw what I was doing for women and women's health, even back then, that they were all right to not do that. But then, as I've said to you before, I was gone in 76, and I come back in 96 or thereabouts, and it looks like everything stopped. I mean, I would have expected us to be way ahead of the game. And here, we're still fighting some of the same issues for women and getting them promoted and stuff. And then when I think about it, well, Madeline Thornton was here. Betty Bamforth, and she went on to be, an assistant chair of anesthesia. I don't know if she ever chaired it, did she?
I think she did.
I think she did, too.
Yeah. And Helen Dickey, and Helen Dickey was wonderful when there were medical students here because the guys always complained because they thought she was giving them a hard time and letting us off the hook. But she was interesting. And when I graduated from medical school, you have someone accompany you, and I had Helen Dickey. Yeah, so that was really nice. Yeah, she was really great. And then we all went out to lunch and stuff after that. So there was that.
And were you the only woman in your class, by the way?
I was thinking about that this morning. There were about six of us. And one went on to be two went on to be pediatricians. One was a psychiatrist, and one or two were generalists. But we had some that started that didn't finish. But there must have been six of us, I think. So it was about less than 6%. And so anyway, then there was in the medical school there was Max Bennett, Maxine, and then Gabby Zarian. Yeah, I saw her in the health science center. And she was in neurosurgery research, I think.
Yeah.
And so that was sort of it. I can't think of any other women that were here when I was first on board. And then, of course, then we recruited Dee Buechler came into the department.
Well, Margaret, what was her last name? Margaret Crumpacker, was that her name?
Oh, yeah, Margaret Crumpacker.
Yeah, she went off to Africa as a missionary.
Yeah, she was,
wonder how she's doing.
I don't know how she is. Dorothy Barbo, who was in my class, was a friend of Margaret's, and Dorothy's done a lot of missionary work. As a matter of fact, I recruited her to New Mexico from Women's Hospital. Mm-hmm. And we were classmates. And then I also recruited Ben Curette, who was a resident after I was, who was on the faculty here, and I recruited him to New Mexico. They were both great teachers. They were just wonderful. And so when you look at the number of women, professors and associate professors, it's not a big change. And so, And it's really not going to be...
It's a big change in the student body.
Oh, yeah. You know, so many were women, you know, over 51 or 52% are now women. And in OBGYN residencies, it's almost 75%.
Now, with these women, do they stay with it? Or I've heard complaints, not here, but that they practice for 4 or 5 years and then they go home?
Well, I think the career for women, we've got to get off our mind the career path that men have had. And it's different for women. And I think they finish their residencies. They probably go into practice. Maybe they have a child or two. Then they want to cut back part-time, get those little ones going. And then they want to come back into the profession. And I think, you know, and even if they're working part-time during that time, but I don't think they're cutting out totally. I think that's a big talk. And I heard... Even at some of our meetings, well, we got to get men back in because if we have women, we're going to get behind in research and all that stuff. That's baloney. I think that we really have to look at that. You know, a lot of women my age never married, and we stayed in it. And which, you know, that's how it was. A lot of the guys weren't married in medical school either. No. But there were more in my class that were married because it was after the war. But, you know, they didn't marry in residency even. And but it's changing, and it's nice. But I think people think about the path that men have had in their careers and think women are going to fall right into that. And I don't think it should be expected. And whenever I'm out talking, I mean, I make it pretty clear to people.
But the path in academic medicine has not been very flexible.
Oh, no.
So that's partly why you don't see so many women in academics.
You still have to, you know, you have to get your grants and get all that. And you know, if you don't do it in so many years, even though they, you know, if you have a child, you can give it, you know, 6 years or out. And if you have a child, you can have a year. Get a year extra
for each child.
But then when it goes to committee, they say, well, it's been 8 years and you've only done 6 years worth, and people don't take that into account for women. So I think it's hard right now for women. And a lot of the young women ask me, you know, how it is now from when I was coming up, and I said, I think it's going to be harder. I came up and was very quietly, of course I had someone wonderfully helping me, but quietly didn't, you know, wasn't as if there were a lot of us. So, you know, they didn't, there you are. But now, I think when there are women, there are more of them, and I think it's a greater threat to some of our male colleagues. And so I think it's not going to be easy, necessarily. But thank heavens there are more and more women getting chairs of departments and deans and stuff like that, but it's not an easy road yet for women.
Mm-hmm. Well, I clearly remember one woman that was in the residency that was a chief resident, and she was pregnant in her last year, and she had to go to bed for a couple or 3 months. And then at the graduation, and the fellows had to cover for her.
Yeah.
And because they couldn't take on a new resident at that stage of the game, so to replace her. So she didn't want to be replaced either. But then when she came to the graduation ceremony and she gave the speech, she listed all the things that were wrong with the residency program.
Did not endear her to her.
So, you know, women have to, they can't always have everything they want.
Well, that's true. That's true. But, when I was in New Mexico, I had 2/3 of my residents were women, and 3/4 of my faculty were women. And within about 3 or 4 months, I think we had 4 or 5 babies. I mean, they were all pregnant, delivering at the same time. But we did it. And, you know, the guys helped, and women would come in and help. And
So, I mean, there are ways to do it. I think, and so I, yeah, but I think the women were appreciative. And we had some nurse midwives that helped a lot. We had a wonderful nurse midwifery program. And so they would pitch in as well. But I think we have to think about it differently. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, a lot of people haven't been able to do that. And so, you know, if you have to, you can have people split faculty appointments. You could have them split residencies so they do half of it so they can get through. And in my program in New Mexico, the guys took paternity leave, which was fine. I mean, they were thinking about it differently, you know.
Yeah, and, well, and so, it's plenty different.
And, you know, and I also think that the having more women as faculty have changed men, at least our residents. I had the most caring male residents in my program, and I think it was largely because they saw the women working with patients, and they learned that same way. And so I think that that helps a lot for men and women. You can turn that off, unlike...
You said there was one patient that was sort of upset when she found out she had a woman physician, and then she got converted pretty quickly. Do you think that was sort of general, that women physicians had a... We're talking now late 60s and early 70s. Do you think it was hard for women in those days to feel respected?
Oh, I think so. I think a lot of patients didn't want to go to women because they didn't think they were trained as well. Mm-hmm. I really do think that was the case. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably also true of some minorities. People wouldn't go to them because they went to this school or that school. So I do think it was very hard. And when I went to Northwestern, there were there several women older than myself. They were in their 60s, I think, who had gone. I think one of them went to Northwestern. But they were talking how Chicago had a women's medical school. Mm-hmm. And so when I was there, they would talk about my doing what I was doing, and they were my biggest fan club, I have to say. But they were very worried that this is now a little blip, and then we'd go back to where we were, because there was that little blip, as a historian, you know that. And then it went way down. And there were women graduating, and then all of a sudden the schools closed, and there weren't many women graduating. And one of the women was a founding member of the American College of OBGYN, and she was never recognized. And so they, I think they had a hard time, even though they'd been practicing quite a while when I was there. I don't think they had the respect of some of the other, that the guys had, you know, this person and that person. And so they were really remarkable women, I think. I do think that was true across the board.
And with patients, and sometimes more than with their colleagues.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of patients didn't really want to see women. That was pretty obvious. But obviously it's changed. But I had a little bit of that, but I think the women that were ahead of me had more of it.
And minorities, did we have any in the medical school when you were here in those days?
I can't, not my class. I can't think of any. Perhaps the first one I had when I went to my internship, and Perry was there.
And then Perry came back here.
We were sort of interesting because I stayed on. I came back here. Perry was in Washington or Oregon for a while. I think he did a fellowship there. Perry then was in New Mexico, and I was here. And then it's really interesting. And then Perry came to Wisconsin, and I went to New Mexico.
So you barely overlapped here.
Barely. We're not too much. And so when we moved into town, they lived down in Seminole, Henderson and Perry and Virginia lived right down the street. And so when they had a sled that their kids used, and so one day they came over to the house with their sled and gave it to the girls. And so now we've known what we've known for a long time.
There was a black resident that went to Sinai, and he died. I can remember.
Oh, yeah, Phil Hamilton.
Phil Hamilton, right.
Yeah. He was there when I was there, yeah. And I think there was even some sort of award named after him. Wonderful teacher. And then he was in Philadelphia, I think, I don't know where. And he was on the telephone talking to someone, and he had a heart attack and died.
Well, they had a memorial for him over at Sinai, because yeah. I remember going to it, and Perry sang Amazing Grace. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. 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 Really melted the house.
Yeah, sure. And George Lithcott, when did he get here? It must have been much later.
Well, I was here when he was here.
Oh, you were.
Was he the guy who had a new white coach?
No, that was Bob Cook.
Was that Bob Cook?
George Lithcott.
Did Lithcott come after Bob Cook?
No. No, I think he was here at the same time.
Yeah,
weren't they?
Yeah, I think he must have been here.
Now, Bob Cook was something else.
Oh, he was something else indeed. He almost killed Ben. Really, literally.
I think he went to the women's hospital.
Yeah, and he tried to pull the same thing there. He wanted to separate, he wanted to put OB into the pediatrics. And nobody told Ben that this was going on, and Ben was getting ready to have his heart operated, so he wasn't in the world's most vigorous condition. And it was George Hanks over at St. Mary's. He said, "Ben, what's going on?"
Yeah.
Ben said, "What are you talking about, George?"
Wow. So it wasn't just the couch that was what problem.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't just the couch.
Cook, I'd forgotten it. So that was written up in the paper.
He lost his job and his wife. And this is, I don't know how many deans we've had here, but for a while they were frequent visitors.
Yeah, they were. Yeah. Peter Eichmann was for a while, and Bud Brown, wasn't it? And
Phil Cohen. I think Phil Cohen was interim dean for something like 8 years.
Yes, he was. He was.
But,
well, I'm kind of curious about how the medical staff felt, and the nursing staff for that matter, felt about letting husbands into labor and then ultimately into delivery room. Because they were in the way a bit. And this is happening sometimes specifically around natural childbirth. It also seems to be happening around the introduction of caudal anesthesia when the women are awake and can use some company completely separate from the natural childbirth folks who want to have their husbands with them.
Uh-huh.
Do you have any sense of how hospital policy changed and how doctors felt about all that when you were here?
Well, I guess that policy, Paul, I suppose after it was going, then they probably made the policy to follow. But even then, I think some folks allowed them in and others would not.
Like in the 60s, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And at least here,
that's
the reason the docs gave for not having them in was teaching. And they say to Benoit, if you want to, you can't have them in the delivery room if you want us to have them do the deliveries and learn. And I think the main issue here, but
individual doctors still did it.
And some individual doctors
did it. And Ben
did
it?
I don't know if he was still doing OB then, but he would. I mean, if that was the case. I mean, it was not an issue. I mean, I was doing it, and it was never an issue. And then obviously it went across the country, and I have a picture in the house that me delivering a baby, and a woman's husband was a photographer for the Chicago Trib, and so he was taking his pictures, and he framed them and gave them to me.
That was here.
No, that was when I was at Northwestern.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But here we had quite a bit that we had the men, but I'll tell you, even anesthesia didn't want the men.
Yeah.
So it was just a
when I had my first child, it was 1970, November of 1970, and Lewis was a fellow in pediatrics. And they said he could come in because he was a physician on the staff. And it was kind of a special deal. But it was very soon after that that they started coming more, I think. But that seemed not so usual in November of 1970. But you were already doing it then.
I was doing it. I was thinking before you moved. Probably. I mean, because wasn't that big a deal, really.
Right. You didn't see them as big intruders. Just if they wanted to come, fine.
And they usually were at the head of the table. I mean, we didn't have them down at the foot end of the table, but it wasn't any big problem that I could see.
And the nurses didn't mind it?
No, they were obviously kind of say, get over there or get over here, because, you know, they weren't probably as receptive as they could be, but...
It was extra work for them, I would think, especially if something went, if he fainted or something.
Yeah.
It was the nurse who had to go pick him up.
Well, yeah, you know, we put a stool at the head of the table, and that was fine. It's interesting how it's evolved and everything. Labor and delivery, heaven's sakes, I don't even know that. When I was doing St. Luke's in labor and delivery, I don't remember even having husbands in a labor room.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know
that's very possible. There were some hospitals that didn't let them in labor.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about that. I don't remember having them in the labor rooms, for heaven's sake.
Well, now these birthing centers that where the whole family and all the relatives can come and join the woman in labor.
Uh-huh.
How's that working? Don't they do that at Meritor?
No, they're doing some at Meritor, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I've not delivered any babies at Meritor. But we had, at subsequent to my leaving Northwestern, they redid Prince and beautiful birthing rooms. And so they had families in there if they wanted to be in there.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the same thing in New Mexico. And the nurse midwives had families in the delivery room, and they had a big problem in the birthing room, too.
Mm-hmm. You didn't work with nurse midwives here at University Hospital, did you?
They didn't allow nurse midwives here. They have some now.
Right.
The first nurse midwives that I worked with were two at Northwestern, and I had to go to battle to get them privileges so they could deliver babies, because they could not when I first went down there. And so I did that. I went to went to everyone to get them privileges, and so they did get privileges. They're both tremendous nurse midwives, both from teaching, I think. And then when I went to New Mexico, there were several there, and I had them be part of the department, so we had their department members, and not all of them, but some of those who were teaching. And so when I'd go around the country, people would always say, what are you doing? Because our nurse midwives would talk about it. And I was also on the consultant to their examining board, nurse midwifery examining board, for quite a long time. And I had this wonderful, wonderful group from nurse midwives, and it was just perfect, you know. And the way we worked it is, if they had a consult, they would go to a chief residents, not the first year residents, because they knew more than a lot of our first year residents did. But they'd have to go to a third or fourth year resident, and that would be the first line. And if that was okay, fine. If not, they'd go to a faculty,
And, you know, when the residents went on the retreat, the nurse midwives covered. When the nurse midwives went somewhere, the residents covered their patients, so it worked really well. And just so happened that the person that was ahead of it was getting some award in New Mexico. And they sent me an invitation. I didn't get down there, but I sent a letter about her, and they were so pleased, and she was really a great person. But it's still going.
So why didn't we let them here?
Oh, it's this town is a whole other thing. I'll tell you. Well, I guess there was a lawsuit involving one quite a while ago before I came. And so
not before you came, is it?
No.
Before you came back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was in the '70s because it was after I was here.
Was that happened? Well, for heaven's sakes, they're still having a grudge about something that happened in the '70s.
It might have been early '80s, but I think I don't remember.
You know what? Because that keeps coming up. Well, they had this horrendous case and all that sort of stuff, and you know, there's evidence that shows that nurse midwives, they can predict pretty regularly if there's going to be a complication. I mean, they have done this in this nurse midwifery program in Washington or New York or something has been a big right when I had my poke. So they have, and here they have a little program. They could perhaps get some of the docs to cover them, but here it's a big monetary thing. It's a big thing on money.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's it's one of the big issues here. But you know, nurse midwives are unbelievable. As a matter of fact, my first tumble to the percent women being sexually abused as children came from nurse midwives, 30-40% in their practices. And I'm sure it's high because women see them all. Very high.
Now, do the ones here, I know there are some here because there's a clinic over here in Middleton Hills.
Mm-hmm.
And do they deliver in homes?
Well, the ones that are connected with the department do not. But apparently in the last 2 or 3 years, someone moved into the city and they do want to deliver at home.
Mm-hmm. A lay midwife or a nurse midwife?
I don't know if it's lay or nurse.
See, the lay midwives typically deliver at home because they don't have any hospital connection. And besides, that's their whole philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And the nurse midwives have been mostly institution.
Mm-hmm.
It would be interesting if there's one now. I think you're right. I think there is one nurse midwife who's now doing some home delivery.
Yeah. Came in the town, I think, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, Ingrid, somebody.
Mm-hmm. And my parents are really very good. You know, we didn't have a lot, but what they could do for us, they did. And so that was great. And and I think about the number of kids that are abused and all of that. You know, that I never had that. Just supportive all along the way. I mean, I'd be pitching in a ball game, the whole family would be there. And so it was all, you know, along the way. And when I graduated from residency, though, my dad wanted me to go to Racine to practice. And I had an offer from Betty Steffen, who is a woman in Racine. And I also had an offer from Alice Watts, who was in Milwaukee, and to join them. And I decided to stay. And my dad was sort of disappointed, I think, until after he knew what I was doing here on the faculty. Then they changed. But you know, I'm sure they wanted to say that's my daughter, the doctor, or something like that.
Right.
And so they were a bit disappointed, but we got past that.
Well, Dr. Sarto, this has been very interesting indeed, and I can tell you that one of your mentors, Dr. Peckham, would be very, very proud of you.
Oh,
he was always proud of you.
Thank you so much.
So thank you very much.